So today, this is how this call works. I have you muted so that we don't have to manage the background noise. If you have a question or you want to me to answer a question that you ask, you can press star 2 to raise your hand and I'll unmute you so you can ask your question. To unmute yourself, I'll acknowledge you and then you can mute yourself by pressing star 7. So star 2 to raise your hand, star 7 to unmute you. Let's see. First off, I want to teach you a bit about managing wasted food in your home, and then we'll move on to the questions. You can ask me about anything to do with scratch cooking, not just questions related to this lesson or even Scratch Cooking 101. For instance, in Scratch Cooking 201, we're dealing with traditional breads, whole grain baking, and gluten-free cooking. But I have a question from Mary about gluten-free cooking that she sent an email to me about. I'll address that during the question and answer. I'll do my best to answer your questions on the call. If I don't know the answer, I'll let you know that I don't know the answer, but I'll try to find out and post the answer in the Facebook group for this class. So if you aren't in the Facebook group, there's a couple of you that haven't yet joined the Facebook group. That would be a good idea to get in there and join it. I sent you an email when you signed up for the class, and all you need to do is click on that, and you will be in the Facebook group. So once again, during the question and answer, to ask a question, press star 2 to raise your hand, and I'll unmute you and acknowledge you. To unmute yourself, star 7, and then you can ask your question. So we're going to talk about how to manage food resources so that you don't waste food. You know that wasted food is wasted money, and so that's what we're going to work on today. Just going to wait a few more minutes in case other people are going to join the call. Hello, everybody. We're just waiting a few more minutes so that people who want to join the call can join the call. We're talking today about how to manage food resources so that you don't waste food, and then we're going to have a question and answer period. When it's time to do the question and answers, if you press star 2, that will raise your hand, and then I'll acknowledge you, and you can press star 7 on your phone, and that will unmute you. If you're dialing in or if you're using the link I gave you to be in the call, then there's a little chat box on the side that you can also ask your questions. I hope you can hear me. This call is being recorded. So at the end of the seminar, you'll be able to get a copy of that call. All right, I think we've waited long enough. Let's get started. How to manage food resources so you don't waste food. A recent report estimated that one-third of all food grown annually ends up in landfills, not chicken bellies, nor goat stomachs, nor even home compost bins, but landfills. That includes crops that fall on the ground and don't pass inspection, recalled meat, crops killed by frost, grocery store food that's past its best before date, and even leftovers in your own kitchen. We can't do much about the meat recalls, but perhaps we can make better use of the bounty that is in our own neighborhoods and yards. Do you have a zucchini starting to go soft on the counter? How about a box of apples with a few bad ones ready to turn the whole box off? How would your household rank on the amount of food brought into the house, yet tossed before it was eaten or preserved? Even in the worst of households, it's unlikely that a full one-third of the monthly grocery bill was wasted food. A lot of the waste happens at the farm level because of how far we've gone from the source of our food. Some food just doesn't make it to the market before it spoils. Let's assume that only 10% of the food that you harvest from your garden or bring home from the store or market is wasted. If your food budget is $500 a month, that's still $600 a year that could go to improving your life or paying off your debt. So by managing your own food resources better, you'd be able to improve your lifestyle and help the environment. Wasted food is the third biggest producer of greenhouse gas emissions that lead to global warming. In the West, most of our food waste occurs because we toss out leftovers and unused ingredients, and because stores won't sell ugly produce. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization found that some farmers dump 20 to 40% of their harvest because it doesn't meet retailers' cosmetic specifications. In developing countries, by contrast, most of the food wasted rots somewhere between the field and the market because of insufficient refrigeration and inefficient supply chains. The FAO estimates that when we throw away more than 1 gigaton of food every year, we are throwing away $750 billion with it, an estimate that doesn't include wasted seafood and bycatch. This includes fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, manpower, and gasoline that went into growing and transporting that food. It doesn't include what is grown in your own garden at home or in your neighbor's garden. How are you doing in utilizing the resources in your own household? Let me tell you about my own kitchen. I have 5 torpedo zucchini that need trimming and processing before they go bad. I have 2 40-pound boxes of apples that are waiting to be made into applesauce. I have 30 pounds of grapes waiting to be made into raisins, a small flat of tomatoes waiting ripening, 2-gallon bucket of beans, chard, kale, and broccoli that I harvested last night before the frost came. I also have a box of immature acorn squash given to me by a neighbor and 10 butternut squash waiting to be washed with vinegar and taken to the cold storage room. Right now I have a dehydrator full of 20 pounds of prune plums that I picked up at the farmer's market and a pot of apple jelly simmering on the stove. As well, there is a pot of stock simmering from the bones and scraps from last night's leg of lamb roast. I'm describing this bounty to you so that you can see that not wasting food is a complicated dance between cooking what you have, preserving food in a timely way, and creating food items from the bounty that you are given to feed you later in the season. And face it, you aren't going to be able to completely prevent food waste, but most of us could manage our food resources better. Sometimes wasting food is good. But first, I want to say that not all food waste is a bad thing. This study was based on the industrialized food system. They didn't include your garden or your neighbor's garden, or maybe not even the farmer that you buy from at the farmer's market. Even though I'm a full-time farm, they didn't include me. Some food waste is good, especially when it goes to the chickens and gets put back into your garden as compost. In the Bible, God told the Israelites that they would plant their garden for 6 years, and in the 7th year they would eat the fruit that was grown in the 6th year. The harvest would be so huge in the 6th year that they could eat from it for another year. Obviously, they had to have ways to preserve the bounty from that 6th year. I mention it because lots of people tell me that from a religious perspective, it's not trusting God if you preserve your food, and that's not what I believe. God expected them to preserve the bounty. But here's the thing. Every 49 years, there was a special year, the year of Jubilee, where they weren't allowed to plant gardens. So every 49th year was a 7th year, and they had to rest. They couldn't plant their gardens. And then in the 50th year, they were still eating from that produce from the 48th year. That's how huge the harvest was in the 48th year, and they had to preserve it. Then God told them that when they brought in the harvest at the end of year 51, get this, they've been eating the preserved food from year 48 now for 2.5 years, they would throw out the leftovers from the year 48. And that would indicate to them that God indeed had blessed them in the 48th year. So when you have so much food that you can't eat it all, can't give any more away, and can't preserve any more so that you actually have to throw it out to make room for more, that's an indication that you are blessed. So get rid of the guilt right now, and don't feel bad when you just can't do it all and some food goes to waste. It robs you of the energy to deal with the food that you still have to preserve when you feel guilty. And your canning, freezing, and drying becomes a burden and a guilt trip instead of the joy of the harvest season that it was meant to be. So let's talk about managing your resources that you have right now. Let's let family preferences dictate how you manage what you have. Lots of this food can be canned, but it is still wasted food if your family won't eat that canned food. For instance, my family doesn't like canned chard or spinach, or even frozen chard or spinach. It's kind of mushy for them, and they just don't like it. If I canned it or froze it, eventually it would be chicken food because it would sit in the freezer till I cleaned out the freezer, and then it would be dumped to the chickens. They will, however, eat it as a vegetable if I cook it fresh, and they will eat it dried, added to soup, as long as I add it just before serving the soup instead of letting it actually get limp and mushy in the soup. So this is how I usually preserve chard, dried to add to the soup later. However, because of my current situation of already having a full dehydrator and two flats of grapes waiting to become raisins, that last bundle of chard that I harvested last night, I'm going to add some of it to tonight's dinner. And what I have left over, I'm going to turn into vegetable soup stock. The stuff that I told you was simmering on my wood stove. It's a complicated dance between resources, time, and equipment, and that's mostly what I want to get across. Now, Mr. Joybilly doesn't eat pickles or relish. If I try to convince him to try a pickle, even a watermelon pickle, which is sweet instead of sour, you'd think I was poisoning him. Sarah, however, enjoys the occasional pickle if, and that's the important part, if it's a dill pickle or a garlic dill. Forget bread and butter pickles or those sweet gherkins. She wouldn't touch them. So Sarah doesn't eat very many pickles, so every year I make 2 quart jars of fermented garlic dill slices. That will do her for the winter. And I don't even can them. I just ferment them on my countertop and then put them in the fridge when they're done. I keep them on the bottom shelf of my fridge. Any cucumbers after that that come into my house get eaten fresh. So, I mentioned that we have some zucchini that's going bad. I'm going to have to cut off the ends of it. Now, if I were to turn those zucchini into zucchini relish, which is what everybody says, it would be a waste of time. If I could add them to soup, or I could freeze them, or I could make chocolate zucchini cake, and that would be eaten in our house, but relish would never be eaten. And so tonight, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cut off the ends of the couple of zucchinis that I have going bad, and I'm going to grate them and put them in the freezer for zucchini cake or to throw in soup later in the winter. I'll probably use my food processor, so that will speed up the process. Earlier in the season, I did grate some and dry it in the dehydrator for soup, and I have enough dried zucchini. One thing that came up this week, I got an email from one of the members of this course, and she said that her daughter was recently diagnosed as celiac, and that's made a dramatic change in their household. Just imagine that. You've been baking bread for years and learned how to grind your own flour, and all of a sudden one family member can't touch it. And so it made me think, what do you do then? You've got flour in the house and probably whole wheat berries and maybe even a food grinder. Grain grinder, what are you going to do? Lots of folks are going off gluten this year, it seems. Either they have a family member that was recently diagnosed with celiacs, or they decide to give the gluten-free diet a try because they read the Wheat Belly book or something like that. Many of these households have bags of flour, whole wheat berries, barley sacks that will go to waste with the change in their diet. If unopened, these can be given to a soup kitchen or church food program. Food banks here, at least in Canada, are more regulated, and they won't accept a bag of grain, even one that's been unopened. If you've already opened it, you could consider passing it on to a friend, but do it quickly before it passes its freshness. If you leave the bag not wanting to deal with it, then you're going to invite pantry moths into your kitchen, which you really don't want. If you have had a recent family diet change, don't start with big sacks of the new ingredients like gluten-free flours or even coconut flour, because specialty ingredients are quite expensive and you might be tempted to buy it in a larger package to save money. But when you're first starting out, you don't know the preferences or tolerances of your family members. So it's better to buy the small packages, give them a try. And then once you know what's tolerated, then you can go out and buy bigger packages and save a little bit of money. But don't be tempted to do that right away, because often with a change in diet and when the gut needs healing, a lot of things aren't tolerated. So just go cautiously with that. Sometimes you have to have equipment, specialty equipment, in order to deal with the bountiful food resources. Canner, food processor, pressure canner, a freezer, dehydrator, meat grinder, for instance. I'm not reading from the Lehman's catalog. These are the essential pieces of equipment that you will need to deal with specific bounties that you have. You'll also need a good library of cookbooks and guides for each piece of equipment so that you're able to fully utilize it. I hope you're taking advantage of your bonus book club membership that came with your Scratch Cooking 101 course. This is a really good way to get some books to help you with this aspect. Which of these specific pieces of equipment that you need will depend on your personal situation. Before you run out and add to your kitchen equipment, assess your own needs and the food bounty that is in your own backyard. If you have access to fallen fruit or derelict apple trees, you may want to invest in a canner or a steam juicer. If you have a neighbor who shares her vegetable garden, a pressure canner that you can can with could also be used for a water bath canner. Take inventory of what you need before you run out and buy equipment. Fermentation is something I did want to talk to you about today. I think originally a lot of the food and condiments that we buy for high prices at the grocery store were once a way to use up the harvest bounty before it went bad. Chutneys and pickles were traditionally lacto-fermented, and so people would make a big crock of it, just like people make sauerkraut today. They would get the goodness of the fruit or vegetable with added nutrients from the lacto-fermentation, and they could then eat the fruit or vegetable between harvests when it wasn't available fresh. Jams are another way to preserve fruit. Their jam is preserving fruit with sugar. Traditionally, jams were sealed with wax or tallow rather than the double seal we use today, and their preservation came actually from the sugar in the jam. You don't actually need a boiling water bath canner to preserve fruit by making jam, although it's recommended now. Another way is making soup. Making and canning or freezing soup stock or consommé is one way to use up leftovers. I recommend that if you aren't already, keep a bucket or bag of leftover vegetables, peelings, unblemished scraps in your freezer. When it gets full, have an all-day session of making soup stock. This is what I do. You can freeze it when it's done, and there's actually a blog post about it on my website. I posted it yesterday, and I can post it in the group again. Remember, though, if you do can it, you do have to use a pressure canner. Don't try to do it with a boiling water bath canner. It doesn't get it hot enough. You can use this consomme in place of chicken or beef stock in your favorite recipes. If you add vegetables and can with the vegetables, you've got ready-made soup. All you need to do is add noodles or pasta or something later. And then when you're all done, again, there's some food waste, because if you're making consomme, you strain out the food scraps at the end. But chickens will eat them, and you can compost them rather than diverting them to the landfill. You can also make soup that uses up the good vegetables from your garden bounty. Russian borscht, Dukhobor borscht, is one of the soups that utilize your vegetable bounty. Around here, all the Russian ladies make their world-famous Dukhobor borscht, and they can it or freeze it in the winter. Theirs is rich in butter and cream and flavored with dill, so don't be afraid to make your preserved soup to your own personal taste. If you do plan to pressure can it, omit the cream, but it also freezes really well. You can add cream at the table. I'll post a recipe for Dukhobor borscht, my girlfriend's recipe, and put it on the Facebook group. You might want to have a try at the vegetarian cabbage soup if you've got a big garden with lots of vegetables right now. So here's a recap of our discussion about managing your food resources. First, we talked about the recent report by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization that said that one-third of all food resources in the world are wasted. They end up in landfills and account for one-third of global warming greenhouse gas production. Then we discussed some of the specifics of your own situation, how you manage your food resources, and how to avoid wasting food. Then we talked about some pieces of equipment that you might need to add to your kitchen equipment in order to fully utilize your food resources. We talked about some of the dishes and condiments that you could add to your repertoire to fully utilize the food resources you have. I think we're ready to go to the question and answer time. So press star 2 to raise your hand and ask your question. Or you can type it into the chat, and don't be shy. All right, I have a question from Mary. Mary wants to know how to manage her need for flour. I just want to talk just a little bit about gluten-free flours. Most of you don't know this, but in 1996, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, and for 4 years, our whole family went gluten-free. In 2000, I got prayer, and I was healed from celiacs, and so I'm no longer on a gluten-free diet. But at that time, for 4 years, because I was doing all the cooking, we had to stop eating bread in our house. And it was quite a challenge to find food that didn't have any gluten in it. I also couldn't drink cow's milk or eat cheese. My gut was so damaged that I couldn't digest any milk products. I couldn't digest barley or oats. The only grain I actually could tolerate was rice, and I couldn't even eat meat that had been fed grain. So I was limited to grass-fed meat, which in 1996 was really hard to find. And then on top of that, I was allergic to beans, so it wasn't even possible to go on a vegetarian diet. So I totally understand how difficult it is if you are on a gluten-free diet or you've been diagnosed with celiacs or you have a family member. It's very difficult to manage that diet. What helped me was a combination flour that we got that we made ourselves using potato starch and sticky rice flour that we made ourselves from sticky rice and tapioca starch and then some guar gum to hold it together. But it wasn't the same as eating wheat. So when you're cooking gluten-free, don't expect it to have the same texture. It was kind of, in my mind, it was rubbery compared to gluten-free. I preferred to eat regular rice or rice cakes than the gluten-free breads. And so, like I mentioned also in the webinar, if you're thinking you're going to go shop for gluten-free flours and such exactly the same way that you have been shopping for wheat flours, you know, buying in bulk, buying in big bags, don't do it until you know exactly what your family member who needs gluten-free can tolerate, because there can be so much damage in the gut that it takes a while to even be able to tolerate things like rice. And so go really slowly, starting with things you know they can tolerate. And if you're buying gluten-free, just buy small packages and try it and see how they do. And don't rush into it. Go slowly. I'll see if I can find some resources and put them on the Facebook page for gluten-free cooking. Also, your membership in the book club, there's some gluten-free books that we always post if we find them. And so just check every day, and there will be some gluten-free cookbooks in the book club that you'll be able to download for free while you have your membership. Okay, it was great talking to everybody. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening to the webinar and spending your afternoon with me. Have a good night. Goodbye.